another member today was supposed to get briefing on the implementation of regulations on South African citizenship amendment act of 2010, as well as the death and death amendment act of 2010. Now the only act that will be the citizenship amendment act, because the death and death registration amendment act, the department is still busy. So we won't be dealing with that. We will invite the department when they are ready to come and make a presentation on that. Honourable members, we will ask the DG Ubabu Kabazela to introduce Mr. Pema Shiani, and notice that at least there's a gender also included. We congratulate the department for this. Mama, we don't know.
You should just say that males are not gender.
Yeah, we're all. So actually, at least today we have a map from the department with the gentleman. And I think I will introduce this delegation, but before, I'm sure we will also introduce ourselves so that we all know each other and who we're talking to. My name is Lady Maunye. I'm a member of the Petulo Committee on Home Affairs. On my right is Mr. Eddie Matunji, who is our committee secretary. On the left is Mr. Adam Kama, who is our researcher. We have Nandi Pa, who is on the floor giving out documents, who is also our support staff member.
Good morning, sir. The department. My name is Masuzole Masena. I'm the committee.
Thank you. My name is Rich Bolton, a member of the school.
Thank you, honorable members. Let me come back to you, DPG.
Good morning, and thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to all the honorable members. I would like to make a friend today, Honorable Chair, to just apologize for the young gentleman who is not here. But it's because the committees are coinciding in terms of time, and therefore then the two have to be split into two. They are actually in the same committee and not for the presentation. And so 10 o'clock. So I can see them are here. My name is also I'm the Deputy Director General, responsible for human services and the community.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Norman Ngazaramachia. I'm the Chief Director for Metro Communication Services, Department of Ngazaramachia.
Good morning, my name is Masiko Kanya. I'm an intern at Home Affairs.
Thank you. Masiko, I'm sure you're going to enjoy working for Home Affairs as an intern. like I have indicated, honorable members, when you started that we're going to get a briefing on the Citizenship Amendment Act regulations. The other one we won't deal with today because the department is still busy working on that one. I'm not sure first if we have any apologies from members who are not here.
We do have an apology from Honorable Minister for not coming. And then Honorable Mackintosh, he said we'll be here in the committee.
Thank you,
Ed.
Those are the only two apologies that we have. We are starting on a new way of dealing with the parliamentary agenda now. We must have on the business of the day. I'm sure we were all there during the workshop when this was discussed. So that's how we're going to be operating from now. We'll now go to our minutes. I wanted to suggest that we flag them for next week because we didn't go through them. I'm sure some members had them. Some of us only got them late yesterday. Yeah. So I wanted to suggest that we get them for today and can we deal with all the minutes next week, adopt them and go through them and adopt them. If it's okay with you, I noticed Mr. Marcella, you have your hand up.
Yes, I would suggest the same. I've spoken to earlier with my current address, email address. I'm no longer using that email address. I'm using the separate one. So many people still use the old address and I don't get notices as such. So I would also go with that motion.
Thank you.
I have
I think those who are able to get them electronically, that will happen. I'm sure they will communicate with their members to get their email addresses. And the hard copy ones like me, I will always get mine. Yeah, thank you, honorable members. Thanks for agreeing to sharing the news for the next meeting. On that note, can we then proceed and hand over to the DPG to take us through the regulations of the Citizenship Amendment Act. Over to you, DPG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And I know that at the meeting of 2013 that we are presenting, it's going to be all honorable members. Thank you very much. Looking forward to working with the committee during the course of the year. And as a background, that we were here last time the committee had invited us to present, and then we came with the high level presentation, and then the committee advised that we should go back and come back to the detailed presentation. We are here then with the perspective on the Citizenship Act, but we'll just like to start with the high level presentation that we can get up to see what we have done as we go into detail about line-by-line of the regulation. So the first part is really just to update to provide the update relating to the implementation, and we feel better that today we are coming to talk about implementation rather than still working on of the Citizenship Act, and the better death and age and as well as the regulation thereafter. The South African Citizenship Act, honorable members will recall that this was already passed in 2010 after a long debate among them, and thereafter assented to by the President, and they have come into operation as we speak now, as of the 1st of January 2020. The proclamation was then published in the government on the 8th of December 2012. Regulations were also the impartation of government intervention to the federal system. As we speak now, we have the department is the portfolio committee that by visiting to all of us to assume that people can implement the act without training. We had to embark on a massive training where each and every office presented that training program. So what we did when we undertook that training, the provinces identified officials, the supervisor level, as well as at least one of the clients, so that they can be able to then implement. 189 officials were trained. With number one determined in operation, then 10 heads of offices attended. The attendance is indicated in the schools. We had the various provinces, and we had a breakdown of the Eastern Cape 61, but they then had 59. We then had KwaZulu-Natal, who also attended 33, and the other 69 were indicated. And then Free State also sent us more than what they indicated, 19. Pumalanga, they sent us 22. Northern Cape, then the center score, and then we had different cases in the last 22, as well as Northwest, which had us more than one person more than that. Then the thing was that they will then be able to also at least for the pool of trained people who will then go back to properties to make sure that the office of the centralized training, that they will go back and do the cascading where necessary, but at least all the properties where in the Birth and Death Act, just at the high level, as the chairperson indicated, we'll come back on this. But just indicate that we are working on this, and we just need final touches on it. We will be able to come back and present it once we finalize all interpretations in the department. But we have an intention that this will be implemented also as soon as possible. This is the regulation that touches the rights of the people more than anything else about how to raise the facts. So we will come back and present as much as we can. So we'd like to step aside from it at this stage. We then request that Chair, we all the citizenship amendment act as well as the regulation. We present there are two sets that we have. We have the forms because we have worked thoroughly around the forms. We also have the regulations themselves. So we go through with the forms are just for the people stuff document that we might have to leave to the committees so that they can present them as a document. So we said we'll close the clause by clause that was instructed by the whole committee. Just in case that on page one there is really nothing much there we'd like to say because we just go through the content and how the act is arranged. Just a note in the document. So we are still on page one, and we are indicating that we have particulars of chapter one, which are just directly really nothing else but as they are from the act itself, also put into the definition. Also, then the chapter two will talk the acquisition of citizenship. There are four categories there, and that we will never deal with. And then we've got the chapter three, which deals with how people or how people lose the South African citizenship, we'll go through that, as well as the social values of the deprivation of the child. And then chapter 4 was consequences of loss of South African citizenship, as well as then chapter 5 talks to the redemption of South African citizenship. So that will just be explaining itself. And then chapter 6 is just miscellaneous provision in respect of citizenship. In other words, it will talk to various issues that impacted upon by the citizenship. And then chapter 7 is just about provision in relation to powers, conditions, regulations, have an impact on us. So that is in a nutshell what the, how the act is used and the regulations are supposed to be. So under chapter 1, I think Honorable Chair, maybe one would not go through that, but it is still charging the act under the regulation. If Chairperson has actually testified to the issue of where we can be with chapter 2, which talks directly to the application of South Africa's institution, if that's the final page. And the issue then of acquisition of services, which in other words, how does one become a South African? We had indicated then in this part, we have a component that is regarded as citizenship by birth, as precisely captured in terms of the act and in an attempt to change the problems we had in the past, where people who have born of citizenship, even if it's one parent is a citizen, but because they were born outside of South Africa, were regarded as citizens. That is the main change here. That says now citizenship by birth. And if any person who immediately prior to the date of commission of the Southern Citizenship Act of 2010 was South African citizen by birth, the person who is born in or outside of the Republic, that is a person that is being brought to worship. One of his or her parents, at the time of his or her parents, is a South African. So that remains the same. Now we are not only treating our citizens by descent, but also on board. It is no longer a top locality by the nation of who your parents are. And then any person born in the Republic and who is not a South African citizen by virtue of the rule of the state shall be a South African citizen by birth if he or she does not have the citizenship or nationality of any other country or has no right to such citizenship or nationality. For his or her birth is registered in the Republic in accordance with the birth and death registration. Clause 3 talks to any person born in the Republic or parents who have been admitted into the Republic as permanent residence and who is not a South African citizen, qualified to be a South African citizen by birth if he or she has lived in the Republic from the date of his or her birth to the date of his or her becoming a married child. His or her birth is registered in the Republic in accordance with the birth and death act of 1992. Under citizenship by descent, this is any person who is adopted in terms of the provisions of the Children's Act by a South African citizen and whose birth is registered in accordance with the provisions of the Birth and Death Registration Act of 1992 and shall be a South African, therefore, by descent. In other words, a South African adoption, but they are not South African, those children. Then by virtue of adoption by a citizen, then they do become a South African. Citizenship by naturalization, any person who immediately prior to the date of the commencement of the South African Citizenship Amendment Act of 2010 was a South African citizen by naturalization, or in terms of this act is granted a certificate of naturalization as a South African citizen in terms of Section 5, shall be a South African by naturalization. Any person referred to in subsection 1A shall, with effect from the date of the issue of the certificate, that is the certificate of nationalization, be a South African citizen by nationalization. Section 3 addresses the issue of children. If a child born in the Republic of parents who are not South African citizens, or who have not been admitted to the college for permanent qualifies to apply for Southern citizenship upon becoming major on the following conditions: that he or she has lived in the Republic from the date of his or her birth to the date of him becoming or her becoming major, but also certificate of naturalization, the minister may, upon application in the prescribed manner, grant a certificate of naturalization for the South African citizen of any foreigner who satisfies the minister that he or she is not a minor and he or she has been admitted to the Republic for permanent residence therein, and he or she is ordinary resident in the Republic, and that he or she has been so resident for a continuous period. We need to emphasize that of not less than 5 years immediately preceding the date of his or her application. This person must be a person then who has a good character. He or she intends to continue to reside in the Republic or enter or continue in the service of government of the Republic or of an international organization of which the government of the Republic is a member, or of a person or association of persons resident or established in the Republic. He or she is able to communicate in any one of the official languages of the Republic to the satisfaction of the minister. He or she has adequate knowledge of responsibilities and privileges of South African citizens. This is quite critical also, because in the past, that was one of the problems. He or she is a citizen of a country that allows dual citizenship. We need to emphasize that point also, because it's one of the new things that came in through the Act. Provided that in the case where dual citizenship is not allowed by his or her country, such person renounces the citizenship of that country and furnishes the minister with the prescribed proof of such renunciation. I think it's important to remember here to just emphasize the issue of naturalization, because it was one of the things that was problematic when it was being discussed. Particularly the attempt to try and change the way we were counting the year. It was very difficult. In the past, it was talking about a number of people to decide whatever added to this, 27 years, after 7 years, then you end it. So the calculations were just mechanical instead of dealing with the straightforward thing to say it's 5 years as a permanent resident, then 5 years as an ordinary resident in the country, with the 30 days in which you can have or lose and out of the country. So we needed to clarify that, and that is why then we can go back to emphasize that point. But also then if we look at the subsection H, is talking to that issue of reciprocity. That was the issue where if your country allows it, then you will be granted if you meet the other conditions. These conditions are all required to grant so that the person can be able to. So it is important that in the past there was this problem of what we call just simple checklist compliance. And that is what I'm speaking about. Not to know whether this person is really able to deal with the issues of what are the other requirements. For example, how do you test the responsibilities and privileges of some citizens? People will not even bother about that. They will look just at the years and residents will be here. So in an attempt to make sure that this consciousness is there, that we have this compliance to the key on critical. So that is what I want needed just to emphasize for our Section 2, and we then still under naturalization. Any period during which an applicant for naturalization has been employed outside the Republic in the service of government of the Republic.
I understand that we need some background maybe, but can't we do it the other way around? Because the agenda is actually about the regulations. That we see then which provisions in the Act and the DPG concentrate on that, because to read through this whole Act is going to take a very long time, then we haven't even touched on the regulations. To look at the regulation as a point of departure, and then to see which provisions in the Act, and if you can emphasize that, have actually been unpacked by the regulations. And I think that would
my legal opinion on this matter. You are legally skilled. But I wanted to suggest that let us leave the DDT to continue. So that, you know, what we always do, we just let the department, after, you know, amending a bill, we leave it to the department to do the printing and all that. And it never comes back to us to see if what we wanted was done. But in this way, yes, most of the things that we wanted changed was done. But I suggest that we leave the DDT to finish and then you will go to the regulation with your understanding that they can. You may proceed, DDG.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will just try to be as quick as possible so to get to the regulation. So on then we have a subsection 2 that is that explains that the person was any children. So who is an applicant actually has been employed outside the Republic in the service of government of the Republic or on a ship or aircraft or public vehicle of transport registered or licensed in an authority from the Republic in any period during which an applicant for naturalization has been resident outside of the Republic with his or her spouse when the latter was so employed, shall for the both in Subsection 1. He regarded as a period of residence or ordinary residence. This was just an attempt to make sure that people are not disadvantaged if they were given permanent residence. Now it's time for ordinary residence. And then just because of the commitment that are there, for example, if you are deployed by government, then those guys should not be counted. They remain and be counted as part and parcel of ordinary residence. This section shall clarify that. The proposal of Subsection 1, the minister may in his or her discretion regard as a period of residence or ordinary residence in the Republic any period during which an applicant for a residence is employed outside of the Republic on a ship is almost the same, just trying to emphasize under what circumstances will the period of ordinary residence be regarded by the supervisor. So any period during which Subsection 3, any period during which an applicant for naturalization is was confined in a prison or other place of detention in the Republic after being convicted, has sojourn in the Republic either conditionally, temporarily, or in contravention of any law enforced in the Republic, shall for the purpose of Subsection 1 not be regarded as a period of residence or ordinary residence in the Republic. These are the cases where people have committed certain activities that are contrary to the law of the country. And then the minister may not extend the provisions of Subsection 1 upon application in the prescribed form for a treaty of association in respect of a minor who is permanently and lawfully resident in the Republic, runs to that minor a certificate of nationalization and South African citizen. An application in terms of paragraph A must be made by the responsible parent or the legal guardian of the minor. So that the minor just wake up and decide to apply with this order. The minister may not extend the provisions of Subsection 1 upon application in prescribed manner, grant a certificate of naturalization as a solution to a foreigner who satisfies the minister that he or she is the spouse or surviving spouse of the Republic, that he or she has been admitted to the Republic for permanent residence or not resident in the Republic for prescribed where it describes a citizen during the period of detention in paragraph 2. This certificate of naturalization shall not be issued to any person over the age of 18 years before that person has made the relation of allegiance set forth in Section 1. It is important. The minister may, in respect of any person who has applied for a certificate of naturalization, make such inquiries as the minister may deem fit and require such person to appear personally before him or her or get it by him. of the minister has refused application against the quarter, separation by or on behalf of any person. The minister shall not be obliged to reconsider such application at any time, but shall not consider another application for citizenship by or on behalf of such a person until expiration of the period of at least 1 year from the date upon which the person in question was advised of the minister's decision. Whether that the minister shall at any time reconsider the application if he or she receives a new information regarding the applicant, which may influence his or her ultimate decision. Notwithstanding anything of the contrary, the minister may, under exceptional circumstances, grant the certificate. I think that is important to understand. Under exceptional circumstances, grant a certificate of admission and supporting citizen to an applicant who does not comply with requirements of subsection 1C relating to residence or non-residence. The minister shall, within 14 days after the commencement of the sittings of parliament in each year, table in parliament the names of persons to whom certificates of admission were granted under paragraph A in the immediate preceding year, including business for granting any such. This is in relation to the people who have been given under exceptional circumstances in such national relations. So that has to be the head of government. Chapter 3 then turns to the laws of South African citizenship, which is subject to the provisions of this section as Section 2. A sovereign citizen shall cease to be a South African citizen if he or she was not being a minor by some voluntary and formal act other than marriage, acquired his nationality of a country other than the Republic. Or he or she, in terms of the laws of any other country, also has citizenship or nationality of that country and serves in the armed forces of such a country while that country is at war with the Republic. And if a thing to say, referred to in subsection 1, may prior to his or her loss of South African citizenship, in terms of this section, apply to the minister to retain his or her South African citizenship. Minister may, if he or she brings it under such terms, or the such intention. In other words, it is that the discretion minister might have based on the marriage of the king. But would on a person who fights against his own family, what is the exception to that? And then, of course, the issue then of any renunciation of citizenship, section 7. A South African citizen who intends to accept the citizenship or nationality of another country, or who has the citizenship or nationality of a country other than the Republic, may make declaration in the prescribed form, renouncing his or her South African citizenship. In other words, if it is not in South Africa, by birth or death, and then decides to take citizenship of another country, that person then will have to do what is called the renunciation. Then the minister shall, upon receipt of the declaration made under the section, call such declaration to the register in the manner prescribed, and thereupon the person who made the declaration shall cease to be a South African. I think that was just the point of emphasis. Just to say under what conditions do you have, are you expected to renounce or that is the voluntary. It's great to say, no, Minister, I'm making a declaration, I'm taking citizenship of this country. And therefore, that the Minister will have that recording. That then means that you are not doing the citizenship. But if you do not do the citizenship and you take that citizenship of another country, you don't make a declaration. When that is becoming, then you can do it. So, for that, you want to lose your citizenship automatically. And that is what was happening. South Africans were not aware of that. This is why we deal with a lot of stories. Whenever a person then causes under subsection 2 to be South African citizen, his or her minor children who are under the age of 18 years shall see to be sort of representative if the other parent of such children is not or does not remain. The probation of children to the minister may by order deprive any South African by naturalization of his or her South African citizenship if he or she is satisfied that a certificate of naturalization was obtained by fraud. In just this condition, none of which people may want a presentation or they delete the minister and the minister makes a determination based on that court. If then it comes to the court that you know this was false information, the minister may then deprive that person of that position. Such a decision was granted in conflict with provisions of this act. The minister may, by order, deprive the Southern citizen who also has the citizenship or nationality of any other country of his or her Southern citizenship if such a person has at any time been sentenced in any country for a period of imprisonment, not less than 12 months, for any offence which, if it was committed outside the Republic, would also have constituted an offence in the Republic. The minister is satisfied that it is in the public interest that such citizens shall see to the public. We do have a number of cases where people might find that they will be doing their own countries and their own judge calls and have been found looking guilty of some offense in the benefit of the day. And to avoid making South Africa maybe a haven of criminals who run away from facing the law of their own country, that the minister might then be put in suspect if it is found that this is a situation under which a person is trying to South Africa. Then, whenever the minister deprives a person of his or her citizenship under this section 10, that person shall see to the South African citizen with effect from such date as the means of his arrest. And thereupon, the certificate of naturalization or any other certificate issued under this act in relation to the status of that person shall be surrendered to the African and the country. And any person who refuses or fails to on demand to surrender any certificate which he or she has in his or her possession shall be guilty of an offense and led to conviction to a fine or imprisonment not exceeding 5 years. In other words, if you have been told that you are deprived and you must submit that and you refuse to do so. In relation to deprivation in case of children, whenever the responsible parent of a minor has in terms of the law of section 6 or 8 ceased to the Southern citizen, the minister may, with due regard to the protection of the children, order that such a minor, if he or she was born outside of the Republic and is under the age of 18, shall also, in line with the parent or the senior person who is deprived with the parent, then cease to be. Chapter 4 that deals with the consequences of loss of our citizenship. The status of persons who seem to be South African citizens. This really does relate to whenever a person under this provision seems to be South African, he or she shall be regarded as having the citizenship or nationality which he or she had before. In other words, this just clarifies that if you are then a loss of citizenship, you will be regarded as a person who has resumed citizenship of your own country. Whenever a person under provisions of section 10 ceases to be South African citizen, he or she shall be regarded as having the citizenship or nationality which or she or her, so this before he or she became South African. If he or she has no other citizenship or nationality, he or she shall be regarded as having the citizenship nationality of his or her responsible parent. Whenever a Southern citizen, by naturalization of his first citizen, is a South African citizen by virtue of the provisions of any prior law, representing by the Foundation 16 and South Africa by the aid of provision of consumer. This honorable member is just in terms of cost reference in the other hand that you mentioned. I'll give that also and profit. Saving of obligation incurred for loss of information. Whenever a person sees through the city, South Africa, he or she shall not thereby be discharged from any obligation, duty or liability in respect of any act done or committed before he or she sees to South Africa. This is just to avoid that legitimacy of if then you go search, if you are induced as whatever, then you can by committing whatever act you want to be then set free of your previous obligations. In other words, those obligations will remain with you. The Exemption of South African Leadership, Chapter 5. Here is a reminder who has in terms of searching there for a provision in any of the laws referred to in Chapter 2, sees to the South African citizen who is resident in the Republic or has returned to the Republic or permanent resident having made at any time after attaining the age of 18 years. Making a declaration in the process of stating that he or she wishes to pursue one critical year is the age of majority, the major, which is the age of 80, as that person can then be brought in that generation. And if the minister changes his, he or she may order that such declaration is registered, and upon expression thereof, the person shall assume his or her former government position. Any person who is to the citizen by virtue of provisions or any prior law or by virtue of provisions of Section 9 has been registered immediately before it is repealed by Section 1 of the Southern Act of 2004 or who is to be a Southern citizen by virtue of the provisions of Section 6, 7, 8, or 10 may, if he or she is not a person referred to the Southern. If we go back to Section 11, it makes sure that the reference to status of the person who sees to be a South African. And the permit for permanent residence referred to in Section 25 of the Convention is issued to him or her, applied to the minister in the presiding manner for the resumption of his or her former government citizenship. And then it goes back to what the support of the minister is on the receipt of that application, and that minister will then be satisfied that the grounds for the loss of constitutional of his attention no longer exist or act of any substance and issue to him or her that certificate. And Honorable Chair, the issue of the miscellaneous provisions in respect of the citizenship act.
I think some of the remaining sections you can go through. We were just thinking that most of the amendments that we made in 2010 were made. And I'm sure Honorable Dupeter is the only person who was not here then. At least now you are familiar with what we did in 2010 regarding the amendment of this project. Honorable members, I'm sure we will now go through the regulation. Mr. Tema, myself, you had your hand up. I'm sure you are not going to amend anything because this was done by you.
You would not take it on record our position on this act. However, that is not the discussion. The discussion is for us to join hands towards the implementation. We want to be private members meeting so that later.
No.
So, you know what What struck me the most is the conditions and that from the circumstances. That is explained in section 8 of this current act. Because I mean, this was discussed and I just wanted to understand what are the circumstances that Mr. Mkhize was referring to that may lead to the application refusal, which is not explained necessarily in the act. I'm sure when we deal with the regulations, it will then be simplified. You can imagine an official sitting in the front office having to refuse an application with a vague, somewhat vague description that is said in the act. But I think the proper way, without further ado, is to correct what the regulations would say. Then I would ask if it is not clear at that stage.
Thank you. Over to you, Dr. Mkhize. We will then move. Welcome, Honorable Mkhize. We've got your colleagues in the room.
The Honorable Member is representing Home Affairs. Thank you, Honorable Chair. We will go directly to the regulations. They are not very long. It was just meant to amplify change that is right to public funding. And that also any person who has not had any legal background that might have been affected by this act can be able to understand what is he or she expected to comply with the regulation. So that is the main purpose of bringing this regulation. Was to try to work very hard on the chair to make that so that it's easy for anyone who is a layman to be able to understand the impact of the act on him. So the regulation that of the act will be indicated there, but I would just also want not a very long time. Under the definition, as we earlier indicated, we don't have much time to say that, except that we request that we post them to section 2.1, which is the detection of death that occurred outside the Republic. What happened? If a child of a South African citizen is born outside the Republic, an application for the registration of the death of that child must be submitted to the office of the any office of the department in the department within the essence here is that those people abroad might not be able to submit and so the register here in the country for them abroad. But their obligation is that as long as there is proof that they submitted within 30 minutes to that particular mission, then that registration would be done. Of it, not the practicality that may have been that the person to that in the has an obligation to make that submission on the person and in the when a person is written in terms of section 13 of birth and death and section 1892, the Director General must issue a birth certificate to acknowledge the South African citizenship. I think that some of the members are aware that Minister Pano has of the sort indicated that we would be having unpublished certificate where citizens will no longer have some time for an unpublished. They will, from first day, they will get an unpublished as from the 4th of March. And that has made much things clearer. And that first issue would be for that people will not pay for unpublished. We have to go to China. And they waived that and they granted that approval because it's a first issue of unapproved certificate. But now all citizens will have a proper certificate, not just the certificate that's a minimal security certificate.
certificate of naturalization, section 3, an application for naturalization of the South African citizens in terms of section 5, subsection 1 of the Act must be in a form containing substantially the information indicated in Annex 1, which is DHA 3, and must be accompanied by the following supporting documents. So what exactly would you need to submit? The forms, we have them, as we indicated as an attachment on the Act, so that people can be able to go through. As this is as the supporting document required, this was aimed to clarify so that when you come first time in an office, you don't have a reason to come back. This will be the treatment that you will have in Zambia. The permanent residence permit, the police report, not older than 6 months from the date of issue. The applicant's foreign passport, if the marital state has been changed, the marriage or residence, the original identity document, or in the case of a child, an original birth certificate. The period of ordinary residence referred to in section 5, subsection 1c of the Act is 10 years immediately preceding the date of application for naturalization. That is where this is simplified now. It's no longer between you add 5 years, then 2 years, then so many years after you're out of the country, plus 2 years, then it's 7 years, then 3 years before. You see that long winding. It's just not simple and straightforward. How long have you been here? In permanent residence, 5 years. How long have you been here? Staying in the country as ordinary residence, 5 years. Okay, then you can apply. That's not a problem. Then you just proceed. And then, any person who lodges an application for naturalization must, at the time of his application, not have been absent from the Republic for a period of more than 90 days in any year during the 5-year period. I remember it's important to explain this thing, because the issue was there are people who are living and people who need to travel and whatever, and that then they are provided with this 90 days a year. But this 90 days is not recurring. You don't put it in the bank and say, I have another 90 days in the following year. Then it becomes 180 days. Then you say, I'm not traveling now, I'm going to take it later. If you don't use it, it's gone. So that is just what it explained here, that we will have to check and then drive office back and ask and check, have you been traveling, have you been out of the country for 90 days in year one, in year two, or not. If you didn't, you didn't. But that does not accumulate you. Any person who has been absent from the Republic for a period of more than 90 days in any year during the 5-year period of ordinary residence, immediately from the date of application, has not qualified. In other words, you've been here for 4 years, then you want to apply in the 5th year, but in the 5th year you were out of the country for 100 days or 120 days or whatever, then it means you do not qualify because you have not met the position as to start. An application for naturalization as a South African citizen with regard to a minor child in terms of Section 5-4 of the Act must be made by completing Part E and Annex 1, JJ 53 as part of an application for a family. And sometimes we have a problem where people will apply as individuals, as seniors, as parents, but they don't declare children. Now, you find that when later they come and they start saying, this is my child, you have no proof whether this child is a smart child, part of child syndicate. So it becomes very difficult. So it's better that as you apply, you declare upfront, no minor children, that they are here, are for the person kids, the moment of the share of their children, then you include them because they are mine. No, that is my Then ask the department to be able to manage that process so that there is no smuggling of children under the name. Because we can't prove that why did you go to declare this child in advance when you are young? And later you come back and say, these are end up voting for Pastor Jawi and the children that we don't know what they are, your children, your children. All members of the family of the applicant, including this application for naturalization, including the applicant, must qualify to be issued with a certificate of naturalization. In other words, each of them, the case is treated on each merit. When you apply and you've got a family, then you have to look at whether all of them are meeting the other requirements. Not that one person meets requirements and you don't. Just to remove that disjunction. The certificate of naturalization is a function in terms of Section 5 of the case. Must be in a form containing substantially the information given in the chart. As I indicated, honorable members and honorable chair, that we've got those forms. A sovereign citizen by naturalization may be deprived of his or in terms of Section 3 of the Act. So that is the question that was raised by honorable members. Let's go through the proof of renunciation of citizenship of country of origin. The proof of renunciation, as we speak here, this clause is really talking to guiding our officials and the process itself in terms of the process of the country of origin in terms of Section 5.1H of the Act, must in the form of an official letter by that country confirming that the applicant is renounced his or her citizenship of that country and indicating the date when the applicant ceased to be a citizen of such a country. Proof of renunciation referred to in Regulation 1 must be submitted within the period of 6 months from the date of receipt of the letter on condition of conditional approval of sovereign citizenship. The date of conditional approval was aimed at assisting that the process does not delay, but to understand that commissioners cannot just final decision and that should provide this. But that the minister can say you are granted conditional so that then people are not affected by this, but with an obligation that you will provide that letter. Failure to do so, then you will not get in the proof. That conditional will just be condition of citizenship by marriage. The period of ordinary residence referred to in Section 5.5b of the Act is 10 years immediately in the date of application for naturalization. A spouse or surviving spouse referred to in Section 5.5 of the Act must, at the time of his or her application for naturalization, not have been absent from the public for a period of 90 days in any year during the period of ordinary residence. A spouse or survivor spouse who has been absent from the Republic for a period of more than 90 days in any year during the 5-year period of ordinary residence immediately preceding the date of application does not qualify. Remember, we spoke about the fact that if you apply, it doesn't mean all of you who are applying must meet the requirement. So here it just clarifies that, so that you don't assume that because you find the image and you were not here, but the answer was no, the one that you, therefore then you are very much qualified. You have an obligation to meet the requirement. Because at the end of the day, it's an issue of your own commitment. No one can do that on your behalf. Loss of sovereign citizenship. Application for detention of sovereign citizenship. Contemplating Section 6.2 of the Act must be performed in a form containing substantially the information in Annex 3, that is, in Annex 3, DHA 16.4. We have made that those forms available. Declaration of renunciation of sovereign citizenship. A declaration of renunciation of sovereign citizenship in terms of Section 7.1 of the Act must be in a form containing substantially the information in Annex 3, which is another form that deals with the declaration. We tried to separate each form so that no form is confusing. So that if someone can read and say, oh, this is the form for renunciation, this is the form for loss of citizenship. So that there is no when the sub regulation one must be completed and instantly was in duplicate to the Directorate General. On the receipt of the form respecting the sub regulation one, the Directorate General must confirm that it has been duly registered, provide the person who made the declaration with a copy, and file another copy of that person. Application for exemption of self-regulation. An application for exemption of self-regulation in terms of Section 13.2 of the Act must contain a form to satisfy the Section 175. The form referred to above must be completed and forwarded to the Director General together with proof of human intervention in the department for a period not less than 1 year.
And we don't have some of that information. I'm not sure if Alan needs that. But there are courses that I don't have. Do you have all the information that is covered by the government?
So we have an application for Section 8, Section 2, and just indicating what was the accompanying form, that is the proof of criminal residence in the department, that is the document that can be running. On the receipt of the form, the first will have a regulation one, the Director General must confirm by way of a certificate in a form containing substantially the information in the chapter, which is H.A.4.7. That an application for exemption of sovereignty has been so that then you know the paper that it is approved and should then can be duly updated on the population. Certificate. A certificate of confirmation of sovereign citizenship issued in terms of Section 16.2 of the Act must be in a form containing substantial information in Annex 7, which is DSA-3-3-7. So this is 15. A certificate of sovereign citizenship issued in terms of Section 16 of the Act must be in a form containing substantial information which is the same as in 9.1. Application for exemption from the loss of sovereign citizenship. Section 10. An application referred to in Section 26 of the Act must be in a form containing substantial information in the country, JSA 1666. And the last section literally deals mainly with the issue of the seeds, what is payable. The following fields are payable in the respective cases. Issuing a certificate of nationalization and government citizenship is 300%. Issuing a duplicate citizenship certificate, 99%. Issuing a certificate or written confirmation in respect of the status is 90%. Now there are people who ask that they want us to confirm. Now we have to do that expression from the NTR and then people pay for that. When you apply for retention of citizenship in terms of Section 2 of the Act, you pay 300%. Application for the resumption of South African citizenship in terms of Section 13 is the same amount of 300%. Application for exemption from the loss of citizenship also the same amount as transcend. And then the next section is the appeal of regulation and then. And then Honorable Chair, the annexes are all attached and indicating the appeal, and all of them deal with a specific question.
Thank you, Chief. So that was the presentation by the deputy on the regulation of the citizenship act. And questions for clarity?
Thank you very much again to the minister and the delegation for the department. Perhaps more the chief director is also here. They might be able to say no. When we apply, this is what actually happens in our front office. Because we normally get questions from the public. You know, the query that one gets sometimes makes you to become an expert in a particular area of the department. Not because of your own making, but because they are forcing you to know. So they want all these kind of answers. My worry now is that I tend to find it difficult to comprehend how the exceptional circumstances in subsection infraction 5, subsection 9A of the Act, read together with the regulation section 3 in different times. It does not explain substantively what is it that the exceptional circumstances may contain, or where does this application for exceptional circumstances get lost? So that at least you know that 1, 2, 3 means exceptional circumstances, and this is where you apply for exceptional circumstances, because it says only the minister may grant such a certificate of nationalization, where you then no other which is explained in the administration. That is the question I had earlier, which has not been entertained by the information.
Thank you. Just a few questions. The Act talks about in my information from the minister in talks about proficiency in official language, and that the person has adequate knowledge of responsibilities and privileges of South African citizenship. Where is that covered in the regulations? I got the impression in reading 5G that we were going to be pretty similar to what many other countries have actually had a written test or something. That was my impression. It talks about on section 6, sorry, 5 and then section 6, talks about certificate of naturalization, so the issue to the person in particular that has been made a declaration of interest, in schedule 1. And that also I got in question similar to what they do in the United States. Is that the case? That you have to put your hand in clear allegiance? Just about that. And then in the course of chapter 2, 9b, talks about the minister before the beginning of the parliamentary year, I guess, tables and names of people who come back to us. What was the system of previous? Was it just happened and nobody can be about it? Or, and how will this then in the future say, oh, will it be a notice that the minister will then issue and the right part? How will that be? And then the next thing is more of an unrelated but important matter, and that is I haven't seen any marketing of this publicity about these changes. There are many people, and I hear this all the time, they basis. People who inadvertently have another citizenship who didn't know that they would lose South African citizenship. So there needs to be a real clear marketing campaign. Are there any plans? You may not be able to answer this. If you can tell us who would be the right people to talk about. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Marcus. Madam Chair, actually, I'm a bit of homework to cross at the Act, so my question has been answered by looking at the Act. But thank you for listening to this presentation.
Thank you. On your slide on training of the officials, I don't see how in Limpopo they are not here on the slide. I'm from Gauteng. And I'm sure you can show that also in this part. And I'm worried about the KwaZulu-Natal. They were supposed to have sent 69 and only 33 attended the training. What was the reason for this? For the 36 that did not go on training? And what did the department do? Is there going to be follow-up on KwaZulu-Natal 389 never attended, not in case 11 did not attend the training, which is of concern. We have a new act that needs to be implemented, and people won't know how to deal with the issues of this act unless the training is done. You may respond to questions.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, honorable members. I will start by responding to question one. The exceptional circumstances here, we are referring to that, for example, if under ordinary or normal circumstances, if a person applies, we'll have to meet the requirements that have been indicated by the DPG, including permanent residence, 10 years, preceding the date of application, and so on and so on. But this act also talks in relation to other acts in the department. For example, the care skills, which is governed by the Immigration Act. And what happens is that from the question of the honorable is that where must the application be lodged? All applications are lodged at the offices of sourcing provinces. So we've got the regional offices where applications for citizenship are lodged. And they are sent to head office for processing and finalization. These particular exceptional circumstances application will also be lodged there, but the submission is compiled by head office with the supporting document received, and we submit that to the executive authority, the minister, for approval, indicating the exceptional circumstances. It can be a range of them, but one of them is the person who comes here and wants to establish business and create employment for the people in a certain community. Then that will be evaluated and the minister will take a decision. As well as the issue of care skills. Say there is an engineer who meets all the requirements in terms of police report and so on and so on, but not necessarily obliged to wait for 7 years prior to application. So we motivate that through submissions to the minister. And the other question is about the issue of publicity and marketing of the act or the regulations. It is true that we are in the process. We might not have reached all the stakeholders as it is, but we started with the training, as well as the gazetting and the publishing of the acts and the regulations through our government meeting works, and that has been done. We are also working, also going ahead with the issue of training, wherein we will be also presenting the same as to stakeholder forum members in provinces, as well as working through our communications unit to do the awareness campaign. There will also be pamphlets that will be printed that will come. cover different regulations and acts, including the Citizenship Act. And maybe I can also attempt to answer the other question on training. It is true, Honorable Chairperson, that in the provinces that we listed, we have not included counting and report, but if we look at the other slide where it talks about counting and report on birth and death regulations, we have covered citizenship as well then. When we were doing birth and death regulations training for Gauteng and Limpopo, we also covered citizenship. That is why they are not part of that list, which is specifically for citizenship regulations. Thank you for your question. On the issue of the training, one of the chair, the question was asked, we did follow up with the proper child management, both of them, to say, you have not followed people who are not acting, you send a business, and the obligation is that they must pay for those people when they come to the office, and then to capture as those officials, not sure if everyone is aware of the regulations, because we were running a business. I think we will continue also to take to go with the internet and to make sure that we can come back to the chief, because these are also examples to convince. But we will work on the chain to make sure that all people who are supposed to be trained have the information and follow that. And then on marketing, Mr. Tapalo indicated that even now when we talk of the analysis, one of the reasons why it was deferred to the 4th of March. She first wanted to win it out of the establishment and no informed participants. So then they are not taken back. So the issue of advocacy and marketing is one of the critical areas that the municipality emphasized. We will continue with our share of benefited to make sure that people are aware. She will suggest that if there is a need for the input for something that people can do, but we must opt that out for citizens to be informed of the acts that are affecting the population. So, Honorable Defenders, we it's part of the ongoing information campaign that we have. But also the organization of the role of the stakeholders to make sure that they become a conduit of information dissemination. And that's what she has done many times. And then on the issue about 5F and 5G and why we are being covered. I think the main essence about the regulation is that we were amplifying those things that might create more confusion rather than create at the end. But there are things that are very clear in the page. When we move into those sections, like the registration that takes with the is expected, and you will need that to the section that the section correct. If you look at section 7, section 7 says the minister may, in respect of any person who has applied for a certificate of naturalization, make such inquiries as the minister may deem fit, and require such a person to appear personally before him or her or a person designated to him. So that then, if you want to establish the issue of whether a person is able to engage for another interview to establish that he understands responsibilities, can he or she speak the language? Those are the mechanisms that have been incorporated in the Act to make sure that you are able to engage such a person or an South African. In that way, then the Act covers that one to realize the regulations. But those are things that we need. At the front office, they merely collect application, look at all the documents, and then the head office will conduct the adjudication. That adjudication includes a number of the possibilities of to call it people to come face to face. Because one of the problems are people who apply but they are abroad. You don't know who they are.
and then minister before the AGM, and
yes,
and this was done in the prison here in our inspection, and we will have to so that you say it's an unwanted. So what we will do, and legal services will compile that, we give them there, the list of those things, and then the minister will check with them. And then they will have them in writing. So we will just look at the people now to say the time is coming. So the practice is like the test of the time. And when will the market, I think we'll address that. Honorable Chair, I believe I also addressed the issue of the council and the government, and that we definitely will throw it. They are well informed and they are well trained, so that there is no mistake. Particularly those Honorable Chair, the forms are critical. If the forms are completed correctly with correct supporting documents, then you don't have to delay that sometimes it takes for people to have finality in terms of their application. But if things go wrong the first time, you are bound to go back to the bank. And therefore the training is critical.
Thank you.
The practice
I wanted to ask you to again explain the issue of unabridged certificates. You know, when a parent has to adopt a child, you know, people go through tedious processes of this unabridged certificate. At times they don't even get them until the child is above age. So if you could also, you know, just take us through that process into what is required. Do we have a quick minister on the issue of magister because we'll get more confusion? The thing last thing you have your hand up.
Hello, yes, you can buy it. With not more than cash price. The problem that I have is only for clarity. Section 5 of the Minister Act, 5.1c, read together with Table 3.2a, the number of years that are referred to when it talks about the 15 years prior to application seems to be contradiction, which I think needs clarity. Because the Principal Act says he or she is ordinarily resident in the Republic and that he or she has been so resident for a continuous period of not less than 5 years immediately preceding the date of his or her application. But if you read that together with Section 2A of the application, which is 3.2A, it says the period of ordinary residence referred to here must be 10 years, and it quotes the same section of the Act, whereas the Act says 5 years, but here you're quoting 10 years, which is not in the Act. Well, I need that clarity because of the confusion that it's created here. The second one, again on the same, it's Section 5, subsection 5B, which talks about a spouse or a surviving spouse, that this person must now wait for the 10 years to get admission to the citizen, to the citizenship, as opposed to the 3 years that you previously allowed people to be naturalized. Now, I would like to understand why have you decided to increase
the number of years or spouses or surviving spouses should be much lower. Do you think this is a violation of women's rights? And we are pushing them further and we are opposing what the president was saying in the state of the nation as well. The president says, no, we must work hard to protect women. And even the court are saying, they're making reference when they charge you and give it to you in court. When you. So I'm saying that the department, can you just explain why have you opted to increase 2 years to 10 years? The last one is the question of reciprocity has been raised more than two times, even if not more than three times. That if a country of origin supports US citizenship, then South Africa will definitely allow that without having to renounce it. But there seems to be a proof that is required for authorization of citizenship from the country of origin. The government has to be specific whether that is the country that supports US citizenship or the country that does not. So the question then becomes, will there be a need for those persons who come from countries that support US citizenship to also bring proof, or is this only applied to those that come from countries that does not support US citizenship? I'm good.
What are the issues of contention that have led to the delay in the implementation of the finance regulation? And the second one, what is the new date of implementation plan for the regulation? And the third one, what are the requirements for a person to be authorized to be an informant in the late registration of birth, and where are they stated? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you once more, Chairperson and honorable members. The first question is about the process on the and the requirements on the registration of an adopted child or an adoptee. Honorable members, the unabridged birth certificate, if I may start there, will be introduced from the 4th of March, which replaces the abridged one for the newborn baby. Now, that is because mothers have been coming back to reapply for unabridged, and at some point will take time to issue that. But when it comes to the issue of registering an adoptee, which is an adopted child, the same will be issued. But if you look at the features of the new unabridged certificate, there is a field for informant particulars, a field for informant for parents, be it mother or father. And with regard to an adopted child, surely there will be the field for particulars of a guardian or the person who has adopted the child. And those particulars are captured there. But the requirements are the legal document that we normally request from the person who has adopted the child. And we also liaise with the Department of Social Development for verification of such a document. So, for instance, last week we had a meeting with the Child Care and Protection Forum, the National Forum, where in the same unabridged certificate implementation was presented by myself through the instruction of the Minister and the DDG and the DDG. So they understand as well as the requirements. Social workers were there and all other relevant stakeholder members. So the requirements are legal documents that we also verify through our liaison with the Social Development Department. The section on the issue of ordinarily 10 years vis-a-vis 5 years. The regulation is the implementation tool for the Act. And I think it's a matter of maybe a word here. What we are saying is that any person, whether married to a South African or not, in the new Act and the regulations, will have to have 10 years prior to application of naturalization. And that is how we are implementing that. And that means that a person will apply for PR after having spent 5 years in South Africa. And after having had that permanent residence certificate, will wait another 5 years to apply for naturalization. Then we will therefore consider that application, whether married or not. The reasons why we have opted to do it in this fashion is that there are a lot of marriages of convenience currently that are occurring in South Africa. And we have a database wherein people have came back to the department, troubling us, the minister and everybody else, saying they don't know this particular marriage. And they will do our investigation very thoroughly. We work together with the police, the branch of immigration, which is inspectorate. And sometimes we refer these cases to court. So it has been not an easy thing for us. We didn't just want to make difficulties for women. But I think the security of a country is key to ensure that whoever we give citizenship is through and has got patterns of a good character. So we reached this decision based on our unpleasant experiences with the people out there. Our own South African people get married to foreigners, and at the end, they get paid for whatever amount, 10,000, 2,000. The other time I was on television with a magistrate from Johannesburg, and we were talking the same language that people got paid for marriages of convenience. So that's why we reached this decision. Maybe just to go to the other questions, and the DPG maybe will just add or take others. The issue of the delay on the new death and death regulation. I think we were in the process of implementing them. But as and when we were live with the different stakeholders, including our ministers and others, we found that some of the issues were not properly closed. There were some loopholes. And the issue of time as well, schedules of all members involved and so on and so on. So we are trying to speed it up to implement that. As we are talking now, tomorrow there is another meeting where these regulations will be discussed. Probably it will be the final discussion, and therefore it will be taken to our minister for finalization. But I can't tell the date, but we are anticipating to implement the new regulations on death and death in this coming financial year. Honorable members, thank you very much.
And let me check, Honorable Chair, I think with the issue raised, we will just go back to that because it might create a confusion for 5 years and the 10 years. The way the judge is there, we will just have to make it clear to was 5 years for non-resident, 5 years for permanent resident. Now here the interpretation might mean 5 plus 10, which becomes 15. So we will just correct it here and get a resident. I think there was an oversight in the chat, but we will have to correct it. And then on the issue of fairness, I think the anabrisit, the reason for two, I think to emphasize this point, because it was not just a only the issue of the risk associated with it. But in an attempt to streamline acquisition of citizenship. That citizenship is as much about it as it is by marriage or it is by what you are becoming a citizen of a country. So the processes must be streamlined and be the same and not only for inclusion. And then therefore it was necessary that we streamline those processes across all our other acts that are there with actual immigration. So that is the reason why we looked at it and it was necessary. And that is in the 2 years. It just becomes part of your 5 years of an early residence. You don't confuse people to take 2 years to go on each 5 years. So there was that reason. And of course, then it provides a safety net on whether the marriage is a marriage in good standing or not. Because most of the time, people will just marry after 2 years, they will be divorced or they bring their own real spouses and create havoc in the country. As well as the young people who suffer.
Thank you.
Of course, the renunciation, whether it is required from both. No, proof of renunciation, you only renounce if you are saying you don't want that answer. So, you do it between two people who start to not allow to answer it, or a person who says, I only want South African citizenship. Then that renunciation is required. Otherwise, they need to provide those who start to allow for permission. And they just need to give us one permission that your country does. One, we have our own database, which we use to check whether in terms of the status of your country, does it allow? Because a person can say it allows on the part of your country. So we need our own check on that. But the obligation is on the person to provide us with that.
Yeah, the reason I was asking about the unabridged, because, you know, sometimes the process goes through justice, magistrate, and it takes time for, you know, for it to be dealt with in those processes, frustrating people who want to either adopt or who are applying for the So the thing that I'm going to share, I would advise that in future when you meet with social services, include justice as well, because the magistrates are causing frustrations for some families. And if I want to apply for my grandson unappreciated state, can I do it? Because he's over 16, he's got an ID, but I feel I want to apply an death certificate for him. He lost his parents and the only parents there. So I don't want my child to be that's my son. I noticed that the Honorable Kam, you had your hand up.
Yeah,
we'll follow
now, it's not a silent thing, definitely. We definitely have to change this about the 510 because it is in conflict with the Act and therefore illegal, these regulations in that respect. The other thing is, I suppose that, and you can clarify it, but ordinary reason, obviously there's a specific definition that I have checked now, but that would now be ordinary reason from, you know, the moment they actually landed up in South Africa. Because I was just concerned to an extent that now they have to have a certificate or a permanent residence permit to apply for naturalization, and that, you know, you have this 10-year thing and the 5-year provision, and then they have to have this in hand actually when they apply for naturalization. And all of us know that, I know more than one person who waited more than 7 years for permanent residence, which is completely unacceptable. I mean, and, you know, how thorough are your investigations? Obviously, it has to be thorough, but there is no way that I'm going to believe that that is acceptable, that one has to wait that long. So we must just, now be careful that the 10 years of silence now not also, you know, together with this permanent residency permit that someone has to have, and it's not frustrating the whole process to such an extent that it's almost impossible to get naturalization because you have to wait a lifetime. So on the one hand, this whole permanent residency matter has to be speeded up. We say that every time that we, but I mean, it's really just now has to be sorted out, as well as temporary residency permit. The time periods involved there. It is just not acceptable for a country that takes itself serious in the world to take, you know, to take that period of time and learn backlogs and that kind of thing. But it's really just not acceptable. But at the same time, almost, as I say, with all these time periods and so on, not in effect make it almost impossible to be naturalized in this country and to get a permanent residence. So that's
Honourable Gam has really covered the legal aspect of this. Because my question was simply to say, when this regulation is cut, is worded in such a way it opens up the department into unnecessary litigation by those who may have come to apply and come across such a conflict. But the other suggestion was that once we are going to reword it, it would actually be proper to quote the two processes that defend that very much linked the permanent residency, which is the process that takes you the years, as well as the process that takes you to section 5.1c, because that one has to be correctly referred to and quoted as it appears in the Principal Act to avoid that conflict. The other question here is really on the whole issue, you know, that the minister is the person that decides who, and he or she can decide that I want to grant you the special for the exceptional the exceptional entrance to the citizenship or not, and or appoint somebody else to do that. I think if the exceptional skills are not updated timelessly and they are not gazetted timelessly, that becomes a challenge, because then even if you want to enter, that becomes a very frustrating exercise. Because who would know what are the skills that are exceptional if they are not gazetted, if they are not updated? And that then becomes a nightmare as well. And we know, we see the legislation, but when it comes to the actual implementation, you find that people come back to us and we should not be dealing with all of those things. And going into oversight, we don't get to sit in the queues and listen to people's frustrations. Except that you get the email complaining that this is a problem. That is the area today which I just needed to play. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you then for you. That one was the honorable member for saying that we will try and read up those sections properly so that they are understanding. Honorable member saying, we have come to the end of the first session, and I would like to thank the department for their input on this matter. And we hope we are going to complete the best and best penalty so that we are also able to deal with them. But I would like to again emphasize the issue of training, that it is important that officials go on training, because if they don't, they frustrate people, the community in queue. We had a meeting with the transgender group last year, and they were also, you know, emphasizing this issue of officials who are not trained, who know just a lot of them, because they don't know some of these things are there. So we do need to address this point of training. Thank you, DPG, with your team. You may not if you so wish to. And then we continue with our business as the committee. I think we need to first discuss the issue of the Ugandan delegation that is visiting us. We wanted views from other members because we thought we should invite them for a Wednesday. We know that some members have other meetings speaking on Wednesday. So at least all members responded that the Wednesday will be okay. We are proposing the Wednesday of the 13th, am I right, of the 13th March, that we meet with the delegation from Uganda, and I hope members will note that. Honourable Director, you wanted to say something?
Yes, I want to ask what time is
And I think the issue of time will come later, but we agree that we meet with the delegation on the 13th, which will be the Wednesday, 13th March. We are in agreement on that.
My request for apologies, I had already an appointment from 10:30 to 12:00. But I did. It does not mean they can't come in, but I just need to accept to submit that apology.
Okay, your apology will be noted in that. So we agree for the 13th. The second one is the seminar on electoral voting and counting technology. We should schedule for the 11th and 12th, and the 11th is to the Tuesday.
Monday.
Monday. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, so Monday is the constituency day, and then the 12th is the committee day. Are we meeting on the 12th? Yeah, we are having a meeting on the 12th, so I don't know. I'm in your hands.
What's the seminar?
Seminar is on electronic voting and technology, something like that. Unless we go there on Monday, and then Tuesday we have our meeting, Wednesday we meet with the Ugandan delegation. Can I hear from you guys?
I think this is important to consider, Jane. It is an IEC matter. We are getting close to the elections. I don't know whether we're going to use electronic voting, but I mean, point is for our future work in this regard and to sort of understand some of the dynamics and elements involved here, I think we should consider attending and then just, not have a meeting that week.
Agreed?
Yes.
And then the meeting that we schedule for the Tuesday, we can postpone it for some time. We may sit on a Friday. Yes, thank you guys.
Honourable Chair. Just want to ask, is it evening on Tuesday? Does that mean we would be excused for it? And if so, would you make arrangements? Thank you.
We will ask for permission for that. For Tuesday. Yeah, we will ask permission for Tuesday. Thank you, Honourable Member. So we attend Monday and Tuesday. And then Wednesday we meet with the Ugandan delegation. Now, the meeting, can we postpone it for that Friday or can we arrange it for the other Friday? What are you saying, guys? Honourable Member?
I'd say, why can't we just combine it with another one of our meetings? Friday has become very difficult, members. Travel back sometimes. Some of us have other meetings on Friday. It's a working day, supposedly. So, I suppose, why don't we just see whether we can combine it with another program on another trip? The second thing is, can we please just get more information about this morning, in terms of times and when we have to be where and what the information is that we keep up to that and let us have that as soon as possible.
Yeah, I think the information will be conveyed to members because it's
at the Cape Town International Convention Center. So I'm sure we will every morning convene here and get transport to the ICC. Agreed? But other details will follow. Eddie will be there to make arrangements and send them time up so that the members get the information. Honorable Director?
Thanks, Jess. I was partly covered by I suggest that we incorporate that Tuesday's agenda item onto next Tuesday, because I see it's the human trafficking legislation.
Yeah.
I would imagine it wouldn't take all the morning. Let's just have the two items on the agenda.
Yeah, we agree that we will combine it with other committee work, but with pleasure for the following week.
Yeah.
Or we will see, but we will replace this. This other agenda that you. Honourable members, thank you very much for having me.